Pastor Doug here from Crossroads. It's great to be with you. I hope that today's message will draw you closer to Jesus.
When I was in high school, I played on the golf team. And every day we'd go out to the course for practice. And maybe once a week, we would do something called a scramble. Now, maybe some of you are familiar with a golf scramble. It's a pretty common format for charity tournaments and other things like that. But for those who are not aware, a scramble is different from regular golf. In regular golf, you play with a group of people. Everyone plays their own ball the whole way through the end of the hole, and they keep their own score. But with a scramble, you play as a group. You play together. So everyone tees off at the same time. Then you get to pick the best shot of your group. Everyone picks up their ball, moves it to the best shot, and then you do the same thing over and over again for the hole. And at the end, you keep one score. So you play together. It's a lot of fun. If you've never played it, it's a really fun way to play golf. It's entertaining. And the cool thing is it gives you an opportunity to get a really low score. It does. Now, I was a relatively average golfer. I was a lot of times playing with relatively average golfers. And you might think if you were put together three average golfers, you'd get an average score, but you don't. You don't. Because every time I would mess up, one of my teammates probably wouldn't. And every time you go to putt, you get three or four looks at it. And you can read off of what each other was doing to make your improvements the best time. So almost inevitably, your score as a group was significantly lower than the score you'd be able to shoot individually. And that's what's awesome about doing it. You are strengthened by the group. You're able to get scores in a scramble that you would not be able to achieve otherwise. There's levels of golf you can attain as part of a group that you can't on your own. And what's true in golf is also true in faith. The strength of others helps us. Being part of a group actually helps us grow, helps us get better, helps us experience things that we wouldn't be able to experience otherwise. So at Crossroads here, our discipleship process is worship, serve, connect. We believe if you do these three things on a regular basis, you're going to grow. So speaking of that connect part, connecting with other believers in a meaningful way, within meaningful relationships, is an essential part of how we grow. And because we believe that at Crossroads, we want to facilitate that as best we can. We want to give you the opportunity to connect in meaningful relationships. And so one of the ways we do that is through community groups. So right now, we are kicking off brand new community groups year. It's an awesome opportunity, if you have not yet signed up for a group, to be able to sign up for one, to be able to join a group. You have an opportunity to connect with people right now. This might be the exact thing you need to be able to take your spiritual life to the next level. So for the next few minutes, I want to show you a couple of ways that groups can help you grow. Now, if you're already in a group, I hope that this will be a reminder to you of how important the role of your group is in your life, and just give you a refresher about that as you head into the new groups here. If you haven't joined a group yet, I hope you will become excited and really want to experience what life is like in a group. So we're going to talk about three ways that groups can help you grow. And these are three specific things that groups can provide that can help you get to a place in your faith and in your life that you might not be able to get to otherwise. Something that will help stimulate your growth. So let's jump right in. What is the first way that groups help us grow? Groups help us grow through learning. Groups are a place where we can learn. Now, to explore this, we're going to look at a story of an unlikely man who approached Jesus. And we're going to be in John chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Now, there was a Pharisee, a man named Nicodemus, who was a member of the Jewish ruling council, and he came to Jesus at night. We're going to stop there for a second. So this guy, Nicodemus, comes to Jesus at night. Now, that was an unusual thing to do. That was not an ordinary thing for someone to be approaching someone like Jesus at night. So why? Why is he doing that? Well, The context of the passage gives us some clues. First of all, Nicodemus was a Pharisee. Not only was he a Pharisee, but he was a member of the Jewish ruling council. Now, if you're familiar with the story of Jesus and Jesus' life very much, you know that Jesus did not get along with the Pharisees. He really didn't get along with the Jewish ruling council. Okay, he reserved some of his harshest criticisms and critiques for this group of people. Conversely, the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders hated Jesus. They hated him to the point where they eventually had him executed. So you can imagine someone of this group coming to Jesus and having a conversation in public, in daylight, in the open, might have been a little bit awkward. So he comes to Jesus at night. But why does he come? What's going on here? Why does he come? Well, the verse continues. He came to Jesus at night and said, "Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God. For no one could perform the signs you are doing if God were not with him." Okay, why does he come? Because he recognizes there's something about this Jesus guy. There's something different about him. There's something here. I don't necessarily know what it is, but there is something here that needs further explanation. He comes to explore. He comes to ask questions. He needs to process who Jesus is and what Jesus is all about. And it's just not something he can do in an open setting, partially because of his role, partially because there was always crowds around Jesus. But also, some questions just need a more intimate setting. Some things you got to ask just need an intimate setting. Do you ever just need to process things out loud? Something you have going on in your head. Do you ever just need to process out loud with somebody else what you're thinking? I'm like this like all the time. This is me all the time. For instance, I have a hard time watching sports by myself because whatever's happening, I need to talk to somebody about it. That's why if I am not with somebody watching, I am texting somebody, I am talking about it online, something like this, so that I can talk and process what's happening in real time. It's the same way with movies. The moment I come out of a movie, I'm like, I got to process, I got to talk about this. What happened? Let's process. My wife actually kind of gets annoyed at me because like she needs time to think about it. And I'm like, what did you think? What's happening? What's going on? In fact, I started a podcast just so that I would have people to talk to about movies. But I'm the same way when it comes to like books or conferences or sermons I'm listening. I want to interact with somebody else. I want to process through what I'm thinking. Maybe you're the same way. Maybe some of you are like that. You have all these thoughts in your head, all these ideas rolling around, and you want to just talk to somebody about it so that you can process what's happening, what's going on in your life. You've got all these thoughts jumbled up, questions that you're processing, maybe about life, maybe about faith, maybe about God. And you're just thinking, if I could just talk to somebody else about it, maybe that would help. Why are we like that? Why do we do that? Why are we like that? Well, it turns out communicating is how we make sense of the world. It's how we process the things in our head. Here's a quote. "People depend on constant communication with others in order to keep our minds organized." So as we explore ideas, concepts, and we interact with them, as we talk them out, as we ask questions and get feedback from others and the people around us, we're learning, we're connecting in our minds. We are making more sense of things. And it starts to make us feel better, even if we don't get all the answers. So what this means for us is that we need safe spaces where we can ask questions, where we can explore, and where we can process what it means to follow Jesus. And that's what groups can offer you, a place where you can process and explore faith and life and God, where you'll have people to interact with who can provide feedback for you, people that you can talk to help you make sense of things and help you make sense of what's going on. And that's exactly what Nicodemus was looking for when he approached Jesus, a safe place where he can process who Jesus was and what he was here and what it meant for him. Now, thankfully for him, he had the actual Jesus here on earth in person to be able to go to. And it leads to an interesting exchange between him and Jesus. Jesus challenges him on his role, on the scriptures, on faith. Now, what's fascinating about the end of that passage is it doesn't say that Nicodemus comes to Jesus in that moment. Maybe he needed more time. Maybe he had more to contemplate. Maybe he just needed to explore more or work on growing a little bit more till he was ready. So to summarize, there's a type of learning that comes that leads us to growth. There's a type of learning that leads us to growth. And that growth comes when we explore and question and ask things out loud and interact with other people. And community groups offer a place where you can do that, a place that's safe, a place that's a smaller group that's more intimate, where there are people there that can help you. So we learn through our groups in order to grow. Second way groups help us grow. Groups provide us with the opportunity for friendship. Groups provide us with the opportunity for friendship. Now, if you ask people, every single person would say friendship is really, really important. However, it doesn't necessarily mean they have it, or that they understand it, or that they know how to develop friends. I think one of the consequences of the digital age is people are finding it harder and harder and harder to make those friend connections, those deep relational connections. Here's another quote. We live and work and play around people, but are known by few. We try to educate our loneliness away. We try to medicate it away. We try to legislate it away, but we're still lonely and getting lonelier. And that wasn't what God intended. True friendship is sorely needed in our lives. And this is one of the things that group can offer an alternative to, or an opportunity to. Groups help provide us with an opportunity for friendship. Now, to explore kind of what friendship can bring to us, we're going to look at a story about Paul and Silas from Acts chapter 16. Now, a little background on this passage. Paul and Silas are traveling in Philippi, and they're trying to minister to the people there. And for days on end, there is a demon-possessed slave girl following them around, talking to them, talking at them, talking about them. For going on for days, they have this shadow, this tail, who's just annoying them and annoying them and annoying them. Have you ever been annoyed and then tried to do something about it and got in trouble for it? Well, that's what happens in this story. Paul finally has had enough after days of this happening. He's finally had enough. He turns around and he casts out the demon in Jesus' name. Now, what turns out is the owners of this girl were making tremendous amounts of money off of her demon. And so now they see that their opportunity for income is gone and they're upset about it. So they haul Paul and Silas before the magistrates. So let's pick it up in verse 20. They brought them before the magistrates and said, "These men are Jews. They are throwing our city into an uproar by advocating customs unlawful for us Romans to accept or practice." The crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. After they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. So Paul gets annoyed, and it leads to him getting flogged and thrown in jail. Well, if you're going to go through something difficult, isn't it better to go through it with a friend? A number of years ago, I was the best man in my friend Dave's wedding. And a couple days before the wedding, I'm sitting there in his fiance's house with him, his fiance, and her maid of honor. And we're talking about wedding details. And the topic of the photos comes up. And she says to him, "When are you going to go get a manicure?" And he's like, "I'm not going to go get a manicure. I'm a man." And she gives him this look. You guys know the look. The look is not good. But then it comes with the tone that says, "You're going to know that I'm upset with you without me trying to make it seem like I know that I'm upset with you, even though everyone knows I'm upset with you." So she says to him, "I thought we agreed that we wanted our photos to look good." He didn't have anything to say to that. "I thought we agreed that you were going to go get a manicure." So after a couple more exchanges, those two go off to another room to discuss it, and I'm looking at the maid of honor. I'm like, oh man, this is not good. So about 5 minutes later, he comes down, sits down on the couch. I'm waiting for the play-by-play of what happened here. And he just looks at me and says, tomorrow you and I are going to get manicures. I'm like, where did I get involved in this? He's like, you're the best man. You're going with me. How many of us have done something like this before? Okay, you know you're going to face something tough, so you bring a friend along with you. You know, maybe you had to go to an ex's wedding, or maybe it's a physical, tough physical challenge like a marathon or a mountain climb or a bike ride. And you're like, you're coming with me. We're doing this together. Maybe it's just a hard conversation where you need a friend. See, when we go through tough times, it helps having somebody else right there with us. We draw strength from other people when we go through hard times. And those other people help us endure, help us survive, help us thrive under trying circumstances. It's true in life, and it's true in faith. Shared life and faith experiences build deep connections. Most people, when they talk about their faith journey, talk about the role someone close to them, a friend, played in their faith journey, called providential relationships. So to summarize, friends' strength help our faith and help us grow. Community groups can provide the opportunity for friendship. Now, I say opportunity because joining a group is not going to guarantee you great friendships any more than joining a gym guarantees that you're going to be in shape. But it does provide an opportunity, doesn't it? It provides an opportunity for that. You see, when you join a community group, you're going to meet with the same group of people twice a month for at least a year. You have the opportunity to share your life with them and have them share their lives with you. And it's going to be in a setting that's designed to foster relationships. And you're going to be with other people who are there for the same reason, who have the same common purpose as you. So groups provide an opportunity for friendship. Number three, what is the third way that groups can help us? Groups help us by providing accountability. Groups provide accountability. Now for this one, we jump into a story about Peter and about Paul. So this story comes to us from Galatians chapter 2. And it starts out like this. When Cephas, meaning Peter, came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. So Paul gets in Peter's face and confronts him. We got some drama among the apostles. Things are starting to get a little spicy around here. So what's going on? What was it that Peter did that leads to Paul opposing him? What happened here? Well, let's continue and look at the next part of the verse. For before certain men came from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who had belonged to the circumcision group. All right, so what does this mean? What's happening here? Well, pre-Jesus, before Jesus came, Jews did not associate with Gentiles. And Jews certainly did not eat the foods that Gentiles ate. There were the laws and the customs and all those things. We talked about a lot of this when we got into the book of Hebrews this summer. So they didn't associate with Gentiles. They didn't eat with Gentiles, none of that. But then Jesus comes. And Jesus comes and he breaks down every single one of those barriers. Now it's okay to associate with Gentiles. Now it's okay to eat the foods that they eat. But some of the Jews had a hard time adapting. It was a lot of change over a short period of time, and they had trouble adapting. So what we see here is that Antioch, the city they were in, is full of Gentile Christians. So Peter arrives. He shows up in Antioch, and at first, he has no problem with this. He's hanging out with the Gentiles. He's ministering to them. He's talking with them. He's having meals with them. Everything's going great. And then the men from James come, Jews from Jerusalem. And this is when everything changes. When they arrive, Peter starts getting self-conscious. Peter's not sure he likes this. He doesn't want the Jews that came to see him closely associating with Gentiles. He doesn't want them to see him eating foods Gentiles were eating. what would they think of him? He was afraid of what the other Jews would think of him and how he would look in their eyes. Have you ever changed your behavior around certain people, even though you knew what you were doing wasn't necessarily the right thing to do? Has that ever happened to you? I know it's happened to me. I think we've all been there at some point. But what happens here is that this incident exposes something in Peter's life. It exposes the fact that he's got an image issue. He's got an ego to deal with. And in the moment, he gets caught up caring more what the other Jews thought of him than what Jesus thought. And this issue was leading him astray. It was leading him in towards hypocrisy. And it wasn't just affecting him. It was affecting others around him. Verse 13 says that other Jews joined in the hypocrisy so that even Barnabas was led astray. So Paul, his journey towards hypocrisy is not only affecting him, it's affecting others. And it's causing disunity within the body of believers. Peter is not headed down a good path, and he's taken others with him. Now, luckily for Peter, he has Paul in his life. And Paul's going to deal with this. Verse 14. When I saw that they were not acting in line with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas in front of all of them, "You are a Jew, yet you live like a Gentile and not like a Jew. How is it then that you force Gentiles to follow Jewish customs?" So Paul calls out this hypocritical, divisive behavior in Peter's life. Paul is holding Peter accountable. Now, each one of us needs Pauls in our lives. Each one of us, like Peter, are capable of heading in the wrong direction, of getting caught up in unhealthy or sinful things. And we need somebody else in our lives. We need other believers in our lives that can help bring us back to faith, that can help bring us back onto the rails, that can help us from straying too far from the path. People that can help see things in our lives that we often miss. People that will help hold us accountable when we're trying to make changes. We need to be accountable. And the thing about accountability is it only really works when you're in a relationship. See, if there are people in our lives who know what's going on in our lives, we can be held accountable. If we are open to having other people having influence in our lives, and open towards accountability, this can help us. This can affect us. We all need somebody to hold us accountable. And when we're isolated, when we're away from other people, that doesn't happen. But a group can help provide us with the accountability we all need. Now, there's lots of ways that groups can help us with accountability. One is just simply attendance. I don't know how many of you have been in groups before where you're having a super busy day or things are not going well, and under ordinary circumstances, you would cancel whatever plans you had. But because your group is counting on you, because you told your group you would be there, you show up anyway. That's accountability. That's accountability. Whenever you've had a disappointing thing or there's negative things in your life and you're discouraged, you can go to your group and you can talk about it and they can encourage you and you can walk away feeling better. That's accountability. Keeps you from continuing down the negative thought patterns. Sometimes we try to make changes in our life. God's leading us towards changes. We can tell our group about it, and the group can help check in with us on a regular basis to make sure we're staying on that path. And groups can help keep us from latching on to false ideas. Groups are a great place to find accountability. Now, most of the time, that probably isn't going to look like the confrontation that Paul had with Peter. But maybe it will. But each of us needs somebody in our lives who can help us navigate around pitfalls or can help us drag us back out when we fall into one. So in summary, there are three ways that groups help us grow. They provide us with a place to learn. They provide us with an opportunity for friendship and for accountability. Now, I hope that you can see that this opportunity that groups can provide is something that's absolutely necessary in our lives. Now, there are several ways to respond here. One, if you haven't joined a group, we'd love for you to join a group. And I'm going to talk about how in a minute here. But maybe you're still not sure. Maybe you have questions about what groups look like at Crossroads. Maybe you just have questions that you need to ask. You can put that down on your connection card and someone will be in contact with you. Or we have a booth right out back in the lobby that you can come and you can ask whatever questions about groups there. If you're already in a group, hopefully some of this has triggered a reminder about the role of groups in your life. And one of the things that's going to be necessary is for you to participate in your group, to actively provide these things for other people as well as receiving it for yourself. So maybe the thing for you today is to say, hey, as we come to this group here, I will do my part to help my group succeed so that my group becomes a group that does these things. I want all of us to grow in relationships. And these relationships can help us grow in our faith. So I ask you, just consider joining a group this year. Now, I'm going to give you another reason why I want you to join groups. And I'm really excited about this. Next week starts our fall series, our brand new series for Sunday mornings and for community groups. And it's called Surprise the World. Now, this is a great time to sign up for groups because we're about ready to start this series. And this series is going to be really valuable in helping us grow relationships, both with those inside the church and with those outside the church. You're going to become really familiar over the next few weeks with the acronym BELLS. Bless, eat, listen, learn, and send. And for each one of those words, you're going to get a challenge every week, a challenge to integrate this into your life. Now, they're very highly practical challenges and really very simple, but they're going to stretch you. And if you integrate these three things, if you integrate each one of these five things, I should say, if you integrate each one of those into your life, you are going to be amazed to see the transformation in your family, in our church, and in the community. So I'm really excited about this, and I hope that you'll be back next week to participate in this. But the cool thing about if you're in groups within the series is you're going to be talking about this in your group. You can share stories of how you're interacting with these challenges with your group, successes, failures. Your group's going to be able to help keep you accountable to start working on these things. So there's an extra level if you're in a community group to this series that we start next week. So I encourage you to sign up for groups. Now, how? How do you sign up for groups? The easiest way, it's in your Church Center app. If you go to your Church Center app, and in the lower right-hand corner, you'll see a More button. Under that More button, you'll see a menu, and Groups is the third one down in that menu. If you click on Groups there, there'll be a thing right here that says Community Groups. When you click on that, there'll be a list of groups that pop up in order to help you pick which group. You can search by day, you can search by location, and you can pick and sign up. One group I want to highlight, we have a brand new group this year that started. Jacob and Sarah Kanagi are leading a new group. It's going to be here at the church in the office basement on Tuesdays, first and third Tuesdays in the evenings. So if you have not signed up for a group yet, I would encourage you, consider choosing this group because you're going to be there with a whole bunch of people who are all going to be getting to know each other for the first time together. So if you're looking for a group, consider that one. I hope that you will plan on signing up for a group or having a great group year and participating this year. Let's pray. Dear Jesus, we just come to you today and we ask you to be with us, God. So many times in life, we want to do things on our own. And sometimes it's hard for us to share our lives, to be in connection the way we know we need to be. But God, there's so much that we can achieve by being together. There's a level of faith that we cannot get to unless we're combining it with others, relying on their strength, providing our strength to each other. And God, we have an opportunity to join a group, God, so that we can connect in these relationships, so that we can have that friendship, we can have that accountability, that we can learn and grow within our faith. So God, we ask you to challenge us to have a great groups here this year, to connect with others, to be willing to share our lives. And God, now as we move towards communion, just help us turn our hearts over to you and prepare our lives to receive the blessing. In your name, amen.
Thanks again for listening. Any step you take towards Jesus is a step in the right direction. You can find out more about us at crbic.org. That's crbic.org.